With new age comes new responsibilities and new readers. Glasses launch on the pod. Glasses launch on the pod.
Ooh.
So now, can we insert things here? A couple episodes ago, when Michael went on a whole tangent about me being old.
You are old. Why should I suffer because my eyes are farsighted? I need readers.
Readers?
And I'm bald. Who cares? I'm still young at heart.
And you're wearing a quarter zip.
But, okay, here's the thing, y'all.
Quarter zips.
Okay, no, because quarter zips are coming back. And here's the thing. I've been relentless. I have been rocking quarter zips since 2012. So no one come for me.
Is that making the better?
Yes. It was Michael coded.
Okay. So it's your brand. It's a brand.
It's
okay.
My brand.
I mean, but talking about brands and things, I think we're getting into the season where everybody is, you know, Christmas up. Mariah. Can we talk about the Mariah situation? Have y'all heard about this? You know,
no.
She's big on It's Time, you know, her thing. And I think she, now for the listeners, please correct me if I'm wrong. I just saw this story a couple weeks ago and I had to bring it up. But I think she partnered with Sephora or something, and the ad came off very stiff, I think, especially with people in today's climate where we're literally on the brink of another recession. And it was kind of like, how are you saying this when so many people work, you know, 10 hours a day and still have, you know, not enough money to pay their rent, to have food on the table? And the ad just kind of came off a little tone deaf, especially for where we are today. But again, it is Mariah, and we all know Mariah is, she's a blonde.
Lauren, drop it in the chat. Drop it in the chat. Lauren.
I will. I did remember seeing something very briefly about this, but I think there was just so much going on that either like I skimmed it, or maybe I saw it when it initially happened, but I didn't see the backlash that happened. But this makes a lot of sense, because in the past she has mainly used it as a way to it's Christmas. Cause that, you know, there was a joke, like it was a social thing that people were like, oh, it's her time. Like it's
supposed to be. She's thawing.
Yeah. And so it was fun when she like started becoming in on the joke with us, and it's like, oh yeah, it's Christmas. But then capitalism.
And that was the biggest thing that everybody was saying, was like, oh, now it's time to capitalize. Which, again, as Michael was just saying, a brand. I mean, look, we all know that nobody's buying Mariah's music now. She just released an album.
Hey, I downloaded it.
Did you?
Here's the thing. Did when you stay wait, with on. Mariah, you stay with Mariah.
Did you really download the album?
No.
I'm sick of you. Well, because that's the thing is, you know, what puts food on your table. So like, I see why she, you know, did what she did. And especially when we talk about these, you know, TikTok stars, and is every brand, every ad that you do, is it a good ad? Is it something that you are going to put yourself to? Like when we think about Beyonce and the Levi Jeans ads, you know, is that something she's going to be tied to? And obviously we know Beyonce thinks about herself, but her career in many different lenses. I'm not speaking for this young lady, but I mean, she got a lot of backlash, but however, I don't like her because she's continuing to, I guess, go to bat for her decision, but like Sydney Sweeney and her, the jeans ad. So, but.
Oh yeah, we talked about that.
You have to think about, you know, what you're tying yourself to, because it's not easy to get rid of when it comes to things like that.
Yeah, no, that's really, I just read through that article that I dropped in the chat. And it seems like there were some people who were like, get your bag, queen, and other people who were like, because of the nature of the ad, which was like, I think the scripting was like, the elves went on strike, yes. Santa's helper quit, and they felt overworked and stuff. And she kind of doesn't address it. She's just kind of like, you can't cancel Christmas. And it's like, it would be cute, maybe in a different way, but just how things are, you're right. It's like where things are in the world right now. And like how so many people are struggling. We just had like went through this whole like month period where people were questioning whether their EBT was going to be continued and canceled. So then having a ad centric spend money kind of thing when like the holidays, especially Mariah, like it was all built on just like, it's time, holiday cheer. And so for this to be the first year ever that it's like an ad with Sephora and not just like for the love of the holidays and the love of her fans, because Mariah makes money, so much money every year just because of All I Want for Christmas Is You. She yes. owns yes. Yes. like music for Christmas because of that song. Like it is so iconic. And so she was already every year makes money, makes money, makes money doing that advertisement, reminding people, listen to my song, listen to my song. And so I feel like a lot of her fans who love that part of it just felt hurt and felt as if she's just like not selling out necessarily, because like all these artists are like, you know, they're doing it for the money. But absolutely. I think that was something where they were expecting her to keep it. Like, I thought that was like our thing to do. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Interesting. I think yeah. so too, because like you said, Mariah has really, as I was saying earlier about combining yourself with something that you never thought that would be your brand. But we all know when it's Christmas time, one thing about the gays, they gonna keep Mariah in, at least getting a check during this season.
Yes.
Like I remember like right now in the Houston Pride Band, we're doing a full Mariah's Christmas. Our basically whole album written for band, we're doing that. And I just remember when we started doing Christmas music, everybody in the chat was like, she's thawing, she's thawing, she's coming. And I'm like, are you serious? And mind you,
now she's
I love me some Mariah. Love yes. me down some Mariah. she was the voice in the 90s and early 2000s.
I'm about to say, give her some more respect, not just the 90s.
No, not just the 90s, in the 2000s. I would say up to 2011. But respect to my girl, she's a vocalist. But you do have to think about what you are allowing yourself to be attached to, right. Very much. And I mean, Christmas is one of those times where, for some people, for if you're well off, it's a very lovely time. You know, beautiful things happening. But for some families, it's a very stressful time. And you know, if you have kids, will I have enough to, you know, at least make my kids feel like the other kids that they see about getting toys and getting things during Christmas? So I totally, totally, totally understand. Yeah. Are there any, to switch to something more nice, is there any holiday traditions that like y'all do or that maybe you want to start, you know, whether it's in the music realm? I know for us, oh my gosh, today's, we're filming this on December 1st and we have not put our Christmas tree up. Our kids are going to be upset with us. Normally we put the Christmas tree up on December 1st, have not done that. We will do that this week.
I watch all the Grinch movies, even though there's only one superior one. And then I watch all the Santa Claus movies, even though there's one superior one. And then that's about it. And then I turn into a Grinch. That is my Grinch. That's my holidays.
One of these days, Lauren, I think we should, for Michael's Christmas grift, should be like a gift. Should be a flight to the Universal so he can see the Grinch.
I will give him the best onion in the world. I will hand fly it and hand pick it.
Not hand pick it.
Hand pick.
I'm trying to think. I mean, like, I feel like traditional Christmas has been so different for me growing up, because like sometimes it's like we're at this aunt's house or we're at grandma's house or we're like maybe we're at our house but we have people over. And then now as I've gotten older, most of the time I've been like home for Christmas, but like I'm the youngest now. I'm the youngest cousin, and I'm like maybe close to 30s. We're not gonna say I'm close to 30s yet, but you hear what I'm saying? Like, there's no need for like the whole like whenever you have young kids in your family, it's really fun to like do all those kind of traditional things. And it's hard because like I feel like most of my cousins are like in a different area. And so this year it's gonna be, I don't know, it's different. I don't know if I have like steady traditions, and I kind of like it because it feels like every year it's like, what are we gonna do? Because last year we did beach Christmas, and that was very cute to do a little beach Christmas moment, grilling seafood, all that fun stuff. And I think this year I'm gonna be at a wedding, and so, you know what I mean? And then flying home on actual Christmas Day. Because it's cheaper. I'm telling you guys, you got adults out there and collegiate students. I know it's like, oh, the tradition and being home with the family. Girl, do Christmas Eve, hop on a flight Christmas, $200 less. It's crazy.
Because nobody is flying, because everybody is at their destination to
Exactly.
celebrate being.
So
That might give
empty.
me an idea.
Get you a what?
Give me an idea.
It's good. No, it's so, I'm telling you, like, and for like honestly any like major holiday, check flights for those days of flying in or like flying out on those days. You know what I mean? Just go for it. But I don't know. So I'm excited just honestly to rest this year. But going back to quarter zips, y'all already know what Christmas means as well. It means Midwest. So let's talk about it.
Okay, here's my ground rules, because I got woefully pissed off last year for this, and I think a lot of people would get pissed off. And I'm getting my soapbox real quick. When you are not at the convention center, stop talking about work. If you see somebody with a what do you call it, Anthony? Starts with an L, a libation in their hand. Don't be introducing yourself. If we having libations at 11:30 p.m., like, you ain't got to come in, start talking about work and stuff. Be like, "Hi, what's up? How are you doing?" Don't be like, "Oh my God, do you work here? Oh my God, so tell me about that." No. We're people. We're people. We're having fun. Now, during business hours, yes, do business things. After business hours, just have a good time, y'all.
You know,
Rant done.
rant over. I think it goes all the ways because I agree with you. I love being, at a place, at a bar, and we're just
Libation.
having a libation, one, two, three, or six.
12.
West. And we not talk about what we do, but also it's kind of inevitable to do as well. But what we're saying is, like, let's not get too in the weeds about this, because look, sweetie, I just got done teaching. This is my time to be streets, and I learn something new every Midwest. I love to go to the sessions. They're great, but afterwards it is time to, I'm Anthony. I'm not a band director. This is just a little time here. So yes, just take that advice. It's a little bit of advice, and it's okay. I promise you, it's all right. It's all right.
My biggest ick, I think, because like I'm gonna be honest, I'm sure there are so many of y'all who you are going to, you're paying money out of your pocket to come to these conventions, and you're like, I'm gonna use every single moment to like network and like do all that work and everything. So I do want to say that is so valid, and like do that, do like if that if you are like, I came here specifically because I want to network in that specific way. But I think what we're trying to say is like, we have all been in conversations where people are only interested in like knowing what your job is, how you got there, where you went to school, and like if there's not anything in there that interests them or feels like you can help them get to wherever they're trying to go to, and then they disconnect. That is not how you network. That is like immediately burning a bridge, because then your only memory you just gave this person is that you only cared about them because of those things. And then that's it. So be mindful, even if you can network in a cute way, like, hey, come over, how are you guys? Blah, blah, blah. How's your day? What are you guys doing up here? You can easily slip in, like, oh, where are you from? And then you slowly start to get to know somebody without having to just blatantly say, what's your occupation? Where did you go to school? Blah, 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 blah. Like, let people get to know you first. Because honestly, if you only come up to me and my only memory is like where you work, unless it's somewhere crazy or you're just memorable in some other way, I'm gonna forget.
I'm gonna forget.
I'm gonna forget. I'm gonna forget you. But if you like, if we have like a like moment, and then you also happen to give me some other like small things where I can remember, oh, like Alyssa, she like we like giggled about X, Y, and Z, but then I remember she's from Texas because she said this, and then now we're on Instagram together, and like there's more substance there. But if you come up to me with your little quarter zip and you asking little prodding questions about things, first of all, I'm here for fun. So especially if you come up to me like that, I'm clocking it immediately. Back away. Back away.
Now, I will say there is sometimes where our listeners will come up and speak to us, which we love. If you see any of us, please, always come up, introduce yourself. We ended up meeting people from like Indiana and Illinois, and I was like, oh my gosh, people listen to us from like what? I'm like, oh
Crazy.
my gosh.
The funny thing is, they listen to us and then they'll be like, and they joined in the banter real quick. I said, AKA, they helped y'all get onto me, and I didn't like that.
Well, yes, but also it's what I always love, and I say this all the time on this podcast. I love when I meet someone and they're like, oh my gosh, you said da 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 da. And I'm like, did I say that? I didn't say that. They're like, no, you said this on blank, blank, blank on this episode. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Just
Right.
know that when I say things, I let it out, it's gone. So this is always the fun part about doing a podcast because everything you say is on record. And I stand 10 toes down on it. I will have to say, I stand 10 tweets. But talking about Midwest, there was a composer who kind of really put Midwest on a blaze last year. Oop. And
Redacted.
this composer said quite a few things about the way they felt last year. Literally, it was during Midwest. During and what I really hate about it is that it happened after we filmed our collaboration with the New Black Vanguard, because that would have been a great time to talk about this. However, anywho, we talked about it after we came back from Midwest. But that composer, funny enough, last week did a whole let's revisit post. And to sum it all up, it's basically like, okay, maybe DEI wasn't the thing I was very upset about. And was not my anger was misplaced. Now, that composer went on to say like where it was placed and how and all these other things, and basically faulting music education as a whole to even put, DEI versus everything else. But I was like, but you made the choice. And this is what I say about so many things. Is that after you have a moment of reflection, you realize that things were misguided. But before you go and start throwing stones, make sure you are good. Make sure you are really, like I just said, whatever I say on this podcast, I stand 10 toes down on it. Even if I have forgotten about it, I know myself, what I'm going to say on record, I know what I mean. And I
Yes.
mean what I
Yes.
say. And I really feel like people do not practice discernment in that way at all. Because to just come out and say what that composer said last year about DEI and how they felt that it was because of that their music was not getting played, and they felt competition and this and that, only for a year later and after much discourse from some really lovely people that I'm sure was in, the messages and the comments, really trying to educate that person, you still to come back and say, oh my gosh, it was misguided. It shouldn't have been this way, da da da. I don't know how much of that I believe is true. Only because last year, a year ago, there was 5, 6, 7 posts doubling down on the DEI aspect.
That's what I was going to say. He might release a post this year. Coincidentally enough, nearish the same time toward this time.
Yeah.
But, and if you're saying like, oh, I was misdirected, why did it take you a year to figure that out? Also, if you were so misdirected, you doubled down so quickly and you stayed 10 toes down so quickly.
Yes, you did. You did.
So, yes. Great that you maybe understand now, but I don't know if I fervently believe.
Fervently.
I just like everything about how he went about it and the fact that people tried to help him every single step of the way. They were trying anything he said. They were like, here, understand this from this perspective, blah, 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 blah. Everything. He just completely, he would have some conversations with people, but he was still, like we're saying, standing 10 toes down. He believed that the reason why he wasn't getting programmed nearly as much was because of DEI. He believed that. And you're just now saying something about it. And like the timing is a little like, okay, yeah, because people are going to be going to Midwest again and he wants people to talk about it. The truth is, I'm going to be honest with you. Even if he has come to light, that doesn't make his music any better. So like he should have been, hopefully he should have been spending this time working on that rather than figuring out how to write apology statements. So let's see what happened. I'm sorry. Like I remember the episode we had talking about this and I was like, okay, can we like stop blaming DEI for your like mediocre arranging, composing, everything. Like, I'm saying it again. If you're saying that's not the answer, then what is the answer? Is it writing better? Is it writing more relevant to the groups who you're trying to like get to play your music? I hope you actually learned something. You wrote a post about learning about DEI, but who actually knows? But I don't know. I'm not moved.
On this episode of Lauren going off, I'm glad Relative Pitch could be a featured group.
Well,
woo! Lauren, you should put a big old Kermit there right after you say it. Big old Kermit with a T thing.
Not with a T. Because, like, I don't know. He had so much time to do it. There's so many amazing composers who we have featured on here who I think used to consider him a friend and a good colleague. And then to have him attack DEI within the arts and within composition the way he did, and to possibly negatively infect and impact them and their own money, their sales and everything, that there's impacts, there's consequences to like what we do, even if like, so like if you do believe in it, then believe in that. But then when like kind of a year later, when you kind of like come back in because your numbers aren't showing what you thought they were going to show, and you come back and now you're going to apologize thinking that they're going to get boosted, they're not. We're laughing at you.
Yeah. Because I'm reading this and there is still language in the post where I'm like, I don't know if full self-awareness have come around, but I'll read you a little bit. It says DEI was the surface disturbance. The iceberg was deeper. The entire premise of modern music education. At its best, it exists to preserve a narrow, highly specific musical style. At its worst, it's financially incentivized to fail its students. So now I would say the perspective is where modern music education is failing because of basically two ideas of money and then music education as the institution. And I'm like,
Wait, what does he mean money? I'm sorry. I was trying to listen, but if I ain't got the words, I really can't listen. I need the closed captions.
Oh.
Not closed captions.
You know, he says, at its worst, it is financially incentivized to fail its students.
I mean, I can't...
But, Michael, I want you to answer this because you're really in the more orchestral realm. But it says, why won't the masterworks ever be dropped? Three reasons. First reason is they're cheaper. A masterwork is cheaper.
Well, I
Usually
mean,
because
the composers have been dead for such a long time that
and
some of
every
those are
orchestra already
public
owns
domain.
them.
Yeah.
And every orchestra already owns them. I
Yeah.
will also say this, for ours, for Chattanooga, for some reason, whenever we do Brahms, it brings in a bigger crowd than anything else. Like for our crowd loves Brahms for some reason. We don't know why. But like masterworks are cheaper, quote unquote, because it's typically a smaller orchestra, unless you're doing like Mahler or like those things. But if you're like Beethoven, Brahms, like those orchestras, those are not that big. Those are typically core members. So it's cheaper on a personnel level. Then you go into, they've already owned the music for how long? It's cheaper to do because they don't have to buy any music.
And
Now,
like,
but the, yes,
go
what?
ahead.
I was gonna say on the wind band side of things, it's like hit or miss, but typically they own the older literature and the standard lit.
I will tell you right now, there is nothing, it is very cheaper because everyone owns Lincolnshire Posey. Everyone owns the Holst and all the different editions. That little thing is correct. Two and three is directors believe the canon is educationally essential.
This is disproved. I literally, one of my master's like points of my orals was to find three like musical masterworks for the flute and like and talk about their educational value and find pieces by like DEI, whether they're women or composers of color or anyone who's not part of like the dead white men circle and find a piece that teaches those same educational values. And I did that so quickly because it is so quick when you are putting yourself within the arena to learn what those are. There's no excuse for that anymore. So we're done with that. It is there are pieces that can teach you that, and they can teach you that well that have not been written for hundreds of years.
Correct. And
Not an excuse.
I think this is his ranking of saying he is agreeing with all of that.
Yes.
Because he says they think abandoning the canon would betray their students because they were raised on these works, which I would have to agree. I know many people who would sit up here and just say that, the same old pieces. I love Holst, I love Granger, love them, but because these are the canon, it cannot be disturbed. And then the last thing of his music education is institutional from start to finish. He says
Say that last part again.
music education is institutional from start to finish. He goes on to say music was never intended to preserve a pre-existing culture. Music is supposed to reflect the current one. That's why so much concert music is dying. It fails to be culturally, politically, and even sonically relevant to today's listeners. Now,
That's a
there is
crazy thing for this
composers.
composer to
That's
say.
what I'll say.
That's a
Okay,
crazy thing
here's
for him
the
to say.
thing. This is the thing. I don't disagree. I don't.
Right.
I don't. But what is crazy is that a year ago, none of these words, that's what is making me really think about, like, did you do a year of walking 40 days and 40 nights around the kingdom of Jerusalem to have this type of, now open mindset? Because what you just said, I agree with. And I would think that I would never agree with somebody who just flat out, firmly, gustly just started attacking you. I don't think how it is. Are these your words? Are
Yeah.
these words that you have melded together because you maybe think it's right, and maybe you're realizing it's harder to be on the outside than in the inside? I don't know, but this feels like a complete 180.
I will also say, real quick, on a couple of points ago, I just did a quick search of a well-known band composer just to perform his work twice and by a score in parts. It would cost me $700
Yes.
to perform a work twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a
And if I
lot
were to perform it three times, it would be $850.
of composers, and besides that, a lot of I would say when ensemble composers, like collegiate realm people can play, a lot of that is renting now. Like you
Yeah.
can't even own the piece anymore.
And this is why people are going to keep playing First We Need Flap. They own it. They ain't got to pay for it. Everybody, and people love the piece. Or Lincolnshire Posey or Molly on the Shore. I mean, shoot, even older works by new composers. They're like, well, he writes similarly to how he did in the first, and I own this one. I ain't got to rent the new one. Mm-hmm. Like,
and you know, I really want to add, I'm glad I'm going to Midwest because I want to talk to some composers who I really call dear to me and have this conversation with them, because this brings up a great point. Like, there are pieces that I would love to do, but I'm like, one of the pieces I did on my master's recital, I love this piece. I love it. I when I first heard it, it's just been in my heart. But that was a $750 rent. And I ended up, emailed the composer. And was like, hey, I am a struggling graduate student. And it's not like the full wind ensemble is performing this. Is there any way I can, you know, get this on a student something? And he basically said no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, your piece, sweetie, although I love it, it is not getting performed as much as you might want it to.
Wait, you said $750? How much it costs? To play the piece I'm thinking about? You telling me you want me to play some half notes and quarter notes and pay $750 for that?
And do.
You want me to play some Gregorian chant music and pay $750 for that?
We're not composers. Don't cancel us.
Because, you can cancel me. If you got half notes and quarter notes and you want to pay $750, how about you pay me $750 to play it? Because guess what? It's boring.
All right. Well, cancel Michael. But, you know, being friends with modern day composers, we know all the ins and the outs and the why they charge certain things and all the things.
So right, I get it.
We're not telling you to, like, not, like, charge your worth. But I think specifically, make sure you understand who your audiences are. Or, like, try to help with, like, okay, for people who can't, like, flat out afford my work, here are some grants you can apply for, or like ask your school district if there's like blah blah. There's like usually something like that you're able to maybe do a fundraiser, you know, with your band, your like band booster that year. Ask your band booster, we really want to play this piece next year, it's really important to us, let's like try to do a fundraiser and raise the funds for it. And Michael, I know you're pissed. I'm just trying.
Well, I'm about to say something when you're done. I'm going to say something when you're done.
As someone who works in the area of community organizing, and I know that not everything is free to the organizations who want to provide things, blah, 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 and we want to charge worth, all that stuff. There's usually always ways to get it if you really want that. But at the same time, composers, you do need to be realistic with like who you want purchasing your music, and like maybe make it like if you have a grad student who reaches out to you, or if you have a Title I school director who's like, I really want to take the time. The fact that they're taking the time, their resource, their time is the most precious resource, especially for those school programs who there may be one band director, they're already overworked, underpaid, and they are willing to invest time into learning a new work themselves to then teach to their students. Why don't you see that as something valuable, more valuable than $750 even, to say that a Title I school actively worked on this piece and performed it, and not just being able to say, like, my music's only for people who can afford it. Like, I'm just saying, think about it. Mm-hmm. Michael.
Thank you. Out of anybody in here in this chat, yes, I've commissioned so many composers. I joined every consortium that I've financially, fiscally can. I have a wait list of what I want to commission. I vow to this day will never spend $750 to play a piece. I'm sorry. That is just stupid. That is idiotic. And that is just holistically elite. Like, I just don't understand how you want $750 to play this piece. That is half notes, quarter notes, and maybe a dotted half note somewhere. Maybe an eighth note. Maybe I'm forgetting an eighth note. But like, you're telling me Essential Elements One Rhythms gets $750.
Not too much on Essential Elements.
Right, no, now, right.
But it just, to me, it's just baffling. Like, yes, get your money's worth. And you know, let me do a quick search before I just keep running my mouth.
Not the typing.
Right. This is so loud.
But Professore.
Yeah, like I'm not a composer. I've never written a piece of music wanting people to play it ever. I was usually forced because music theory or whatever class we were in during that quarter of undergrad. So I don't know what it's really like to write a piece that I'm like, I poured so much time and effort into this and now I want it presented to the world in a certain way. So like, I'm sure there's so many things people put into consideration for like why this piece of music costs this much, et cetera. I still stand by the, who do you want playing this? Why do you want them playing it? And make sure that you are okay with whatever message you are sending out by your pricing and your policies, that you are okay with that. If they don't know who you are, because even our friends, we love you, we know who you are personally, but someone who just pops on your website and doesn't know you, they may only know you by your price.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Now,
okay. Sorry. And here's the thing, I get paying a lot of money for a substantial work, like a 30, 40, 50 minute work. This work is like maybe 10 minutes. Maybe.
Are you talking about mine?
Yes.
Oh.
Ain't it 10 minutes?
Yes.
If you hold out them little things at the end long enough and keep your, and make sure you don't like, your arm here, don't get like crazy. Uh-huh. But like a substantial work, like a 30-minute work, I could see what's up. Because if this is gonna be that work, the ensemble is gonna get it, whatever. But for a 10-minute work that you weren't even like the original composer of, it came from another theme. Like you got the theme from somewhere else. Crazy to me. I will say this. Anthony knows what I'm talking about. And maybe Lauren, if she'd been on. I think she probably knows. There's one composer I just do not like. Because all they do is just reorchestrate and rearrange pre-existing melodies.
I was literally
I have never seen
that composer up. Right?
I have never heard an original thing.
I mean, original in when they first wrote something and then everything else. Well, I was going to bring that composer up too, because I know that composer, like, you know how we have always said on this podcast that if it's a living composer, you really need to use your resources and have them Zoom in, have them come to your school, yada, yada, yada. But this composer charges like $15,000.
Huh?
Oh, I was thinking of a different one. Never mind. I was thinking about another one.
Oh, you talking about this one?
I was thinking about another one. No, I was thinking about another one. Think about
wait. Oh, you think about wait.
Think about another one.
Well, that's the one I was thinking of earlier when I said to play his piece twice. Play their piece twice was $850.
Listen, I think we understand that it's only men who have the audacity to do shit like this right now. So
honestly,
it's fine.
You know, when for that last composer that you said, I remember hearing stories through the grapevine that composer got upset because certain schools didn't, I guess, join in on their commission or their consortium for a, what was it, an oboe concerto? No, saxophone concerto?
I think it was De Flair.
Yeah, it was a flute concerto. And we're like, why would we? But no shade, but shade. It's like, granted, there was some good music that you have done, but I sometimes think, especially these band composers, they get the like Madonna kind of mentality of like, I am her, she is me, I am hers. You're not Beyonce.
No,
you're not.
I think people need to be a little bit more humble in the band world.
Beyonce. I just, I, again, and this is to my composer friends, and composer friends, please text me. I do not mean any disrespect, but when you are charging well over some people's monthly, like as a student, monthly checks, like I'm just imagining, when I was younger, to have $750 in my account was rich.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh, like, yeah. If a student is wanting to play your work, I think you should make it work. But also think about these budget cuts, these endless budget cuts that are going to all the music schools around the country. Mm-hmm. My pep band budget, and I know it's pep band, it's not sit down concert band, is $300.
That's it.
That's all I got.
Some schools will be lucky to have that.
And that was me begging.
Right.
And last year, I paid for all the charts out of my pocket.
Yeah.
To then show them this year, like, hey, they like the new music. Great. This is how much it cost me. I did it out of my pocket. And they're like, wow. It's just educating. But also, there's some people that's like, hey, our school might shut down. We only got $200 for you. Or in high school, hey, we have busted instruments. Like, literally half the instruments don't work. Do we buy this piece and play it with broken instruments, or do we fix the instruments so the kids have a better music education?
Yep.
So all I will say is we all need to be more mindful. We do need to know each other's worth. And when we can get our worth, we get our worth. But when we can show grace and show compassion, I think we should also do that.
112% agreed.
Well, this was a great talk. I enjoyed all the things. It's always amazing to get Relative Pitch back together. You know, we went on a quick hiatus because it got crazy. It got critical.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving. And
happy Thanksgiving. Happy Turkey Day.
Yes. So,
and
we hope that you enjoyed. And please let us know all your thoughts. And if you want to know the tea, find us at Midwest.
Please.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, we'll talk to y'all later. Bye.
Bye. Bye.